What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Gibson, joined by staff writer Jane McGrath.
Hey there.
Jane, Aaron O'Brien, one of our listeners, wrote to us asking for a podcast about South American history. She says we talk a lot about American and European history, and she wants to know some juicy dictator stories.
And there are a lot.
There are a lot. We kind of have some juicy stuff for you today. It's not necessarily about a dictator per se, but it is about a body, a very, very famous body that got shuffled around South America and parts of Europe before it was finally buried.
That's right. And I didn't know about this story until we started researching for the podcast, and it's really fascinating.
It is. Doubtlessly, you guys have heard of Eva Perón or Evita. And if you're like me, you sat through the musical Evita starring Madonna about 50 times because it's just so great. And in her real life, there weren't any loud musical numbers from the Casa Rosada that I know of. I know she addressed people from the balcony. I don't think she threw up her hands and sang, but she did take the very famous Rainbow Tour. And yes, there was couture clothing and lots of jewels and furs on it. So I'm very excited to tell you about that. But first, some background.
That's right. I didn't know much about Eva Perón before doing this, but she was a really fascinating figure. She was born in rural Argentina, and she really had to struggle because she was the youngest of five, born out of wedlock because her father had another family, and father left her mother after Eva was born, and she struggled. And by the time she was a teenager, she had been idolizing American movie stars, and she wanted to enter the show business, so she left for Buenos Aires. And she started a career in show business, where she met Juan Perón, who was bound for great things in Argentina.
He was. He won the presidency in 1946, and Eva was given control of the Ministry of Labor. And, you know, it's funny, you can say what you want about Eva Perón, because I think that she is a very controversial figure, and to reference the movie one more time, when the film and the crew were filming scenes for Evita in Argentina, they met a lot of opposition from local people who were worried that their idea and the image of Evita would be desecrated, that she would be portrayed in a very negative light. And I think that there are ways to honor the good things she did and still juxtapose those with the sort of the seedy things that were happening under the surface. So she did want to work for the Ministry of Labor, and perhaps this was due in part to the fact that the Duarte family had lived in such poverty, and I think that she did have really good intentions for the poor people of Argentina, and she advocated things for, like, higher wages and voting rights for women and also government-subsidized housing for the poor. And it's important to know that at this time, Argentina had had a great influx of wealth because after World War II, a lot of the war-torn European nations, they couldn't create their own crops, they couldn't grow their own wheat, things like cattle and beef and their livestock was down, so they had to import a lot of these things from Argentina. So Argentina hiked up export prices and taxes and was able to generate a lot of money for its own economy. So finally, under the Perón administration, they were in a position to dole it out and use it properly.
That's true. And speaking of World War II, the whole political atmosphere at that time was very much influenced by the fascist dictatorships that were going that had been going on in Europe at that time. Juan Perón is kind of known for suppressing freedom of the press and freedom of speech during that time. But it was also things that especially Ava really latched onto, which were these issues of labor unions and stuff that made her as particularly popular with the people at the time. And you could say, like, she was even more than Princess Diana is in England.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Yeah, and they sort of share the same sort of mythology, I guess, because they both died rather young. So
they did, and Evita, the nickname Evita, comes from the group of people called Los Descamisados, which stands for the shirtless ones. And the shirtless ones, the Spanish term, had been used in a very derogatory manner to target people who were very poor and who lived in the slums of Argentina. But the Peronists essentially turned the term on its head and started using it in a very affectionate way. And we saw, or not we because we weren't there, but history saw at this time Argentina sort of changed dramatically in a way because people would, you know, they would move to the cities and they would build it up and there was economy and there was industrial activity and things were flourishing. And Evita was very happy because she'd been the mastermind behind all of this. And she didn't let people forget. There were pictures of her plastered around the city. She made sure that wherever she went, there was some sort of PR spokesperson with her. There was always someone taking pictures. She was very much in the public eye. And
yeah,
I think she enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think she did. She was very sly in terms of her PR tactics because, as you said, she always had photographers around her and she was always doing, like, photo ops, basically, doing charitable things. And speaking of charities, there was a lot of politics going on here among the traditional elite and their conflicts with Eva at the time. The official charity at the time was called Aid Society. That's the translation into English. And she wanted to take charge of this, and the traditional elite did not want her to. Some say it's because she came from humble backgrounds and they weren't really receptive to her.
Right. We can imagine that the women in the society were very elite. They were society
sure.
women, and they didn't want to associate with Eva.
That's right. And so she, not to be outdone, started the Eva Perón Foundation. And this basically, using this, she ran the other official charity to the ground because she cut off the government funding for it, and she redirected it to her own charity, and she was able to fund schools and hospitals, which, you know, all these things, orphanages, houses for the elderly, gave her more photo ops, and it made her, like, you know, more of a public figure that people loved.
People were very endeared to her, and it helps when you're in the public eye to have a certain appearance about you. And she had this sort of shellacked beauty, you know, with the perfectly coiffed dyed blonde hair and the manicured nails and the flawless makeup and the couture and the furs and the jewels. She was the whole package. And we mentioned that because of the taxes and all the revenue that Argentina was generating, they were able to disseminate a lot of that wealth to the poor, but a lot of it also went to Evita's closet. And she even went, like I said, on the Rainbow Tour. This was a meet and greet opportunity for her to go across Europe. And she met everyone from the Pope to General Franco. And she really created a splash. But in the end, it was her own undoing, because by 1951, when she was just about 33 years old, she became sick with uterine cancer and she was bedridden.
That's right. And it was about that same time that she got a nomination for vice president, which is testament to how popular she was. She was someone who had recently been championing women's suffrage, so I'm sure this is a huge step forward for that country. But the army actually forced her to withdraw it. I'm not sure of the details behind that. But anyway, she was dying of cancer at this time when that happened, and she knew it. And the people around her who knew she was dying knew how special she would be even after death.
And so one of the finest pathologists at the time, Dr. Pedro Ara, he was summoned, and he was going to have a very extensive embalming process of Eva's body. And so he began to prepare all of his materials and assemble all the supplies that he would need. And her hair was dyed one last time, and her manicurist did her nails one last time. And then her body lay in state. She officially died on July 26, 1952 at 8:25 p.m. And her body lay in state at the Ministry of Labor. And people lined up for days and days and days, 13 days to be exact, to come and pay homage to Evita, until finally Dr. R got a little bit worried that they were going to soil or irreparably damage her body, so she was taken away and preparations were begun for the embalming process.
That's right, and although he had done some work before she was laid out and displayed, he continued the work after the display for several more months, and he was a famous embalmer at the time, which is interesting to me. I don't know how famous you can be as an embalmer, but as far as I could tell, he never really divulged his complete details of the process of his embalming, but
yeah.
I did hear that he replaced her fluids with wax. And it's interesting, I don't know, working here, I've learned a lot more about the embalming process than I ever wanted to know, which is zero. But I've never heard of that before. And I guess it worked, because to this day, people say that her body is still intact.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
And it took about a year for him to complete the process, and we're not sure exactly about the cost of it, but estimates are around $100,000. That's a lot. I mean, you think about the average cost of a funeral today, and that's just for the embalming process. We're not talking about her casket or the monument that was built for her. And this is where the story takes a really, really juicy turn.
That's right. We're not over just because she died.
No. We've just begun, y'all.
Yeah.
The Peruvian government was on the verge of collapse because the food supplies had started to dwindle. And because there weren't a lot of grain crops left, it was affecting the cattle crops. And so they didn't really have anything to trade. So they couldn't get coal and oil. So everything was just all going to heck. And we had mentioned earlier that a lot of people had moved into the cities and things were industrious and they were booming. Well, now those areas were turning into slums. Unemployment was up. And it was just a mess.
And yeah, and add that to the fact that Eva had just died. So Juan was not quite as popular as he had been.
No. So the whole environment in Argentina was ripe for a coup, and that happened in 1955. Perón was overthrown, and he was exiled to Spain. But the coup leaders knew that if the Peronists had Eva's body, they could use that as a bargaining chip and show it off, you know, to her loyal supporters to
rally the masses.
Back.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, sort of a real Snow White situation. They had this beautiful woman in a glass coffin, and, you know, you show it to someone, you have a strong emotional attachment to them, you're not going to forget that you are still loyal to her husband.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided they were going to hide the body.
That's right. And so they actually made even decoy bodies of Eva. Some, I believe, were complete replicas of her body made of wax to throw people off. And they sent decoy bodies to different places. But they sent the real body to an undisclosed burial location in Italy. And they used a fake name on the gravesite. So,
and even before this, even
yeah.
before she got to Italy, there was some rigmarole in Argentina where the coup leaders tried to bury her in an unmarked grave plot, and the guy
That's
who was
right.
responsible for that, he got kind of creeped out because some somewhat superstitious stuff started happening, and so he stashed the body in an attic, and then it was discovered, and then she eventually got shipped off to Italy.
That's right, and so she was in Italy for a long time, and Juan Perón at that time was living in exile in Madrid. They finally allowed them to turn over the body to Juan Perón in Spain at the time, and so he kept it there for a little while. And when there was another military overthrow, transition, they actually brought Juan Perón back to the presidency again in Argentina. And by this time, they actually left Eva's body there at first, and so Juan Perón is back in the presidency, but he soon dies. He actually doesn't last very long, less than a year, I believe. And meantime, he's married again. his wife, Isabella, or Isabel, and I forget, I've actually seen both ways, his wife at the time takes over, which is, it's kind of controversial. She's not incredibly popular. And so in sort of a last-ditch effort to win back the people's praise and their favor, she actually has Ava's body shipped back to Argentina where it belongs and put it next to her husband, Juan Perón's body, in the presidential palace.
That's a way to get some clout.
True.
And if you guys have been keeping track of the timeline here, we know that Perón came back to Argentina in 71. And I think he died around 74 or so. So Ava's body has been unburied for, what, 24 years at this point in time?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So she's in state, and then finally it is time to bury her. And we want to do this right, you know? So they commission a company that manufactures bank vaults to create this incredibly intricate, incredibly, like, bomb-proof, fireproof, whatever-proof coffin for Ava. And she's taken to the Duarte family tomb in Buenos Aires, and she's buried there about 20 feet underground, and her sister was given the only key to the tomb, and supposedly it was sort of decked to the nines with security, and it's completely burglary-proof, etc. And as far as we know, it's still undisturbed. However, Juan Perón was not so lucky. Even though his was made with bulletproof glass, thieves got in, and they were able to cut off his hands.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah. And it was a real scandal trying to track down who had what information about that crime, and a lot of people died suspiciously, so I'm not sure that that is a solved case yet.
That's true, and people are still pretty preoccupied, very attracted to the allure of Eva's body to this day. In the 1990s, this author named Thomas Elroy Martinez actually wrote a book named Santa Evita, and he was able to get a lot of research from military informants who had contact with Juan Perón when he was living in Spain, etc. And so he actually wrote a novel, not a history book, but a novel about it, because he said that the information that he found was so incredible that it needed to be told, the truth needed to be told in novel form. So if you go look up this book, take everything with a grain of salt, but he does describe very detailed accounts of Juan keeping the corpse, when he was living in Madrid at least, keeping the corpse in an open casket in his dining room, and Isabel, his new wife, had been combing her hair daily.
Wow.
Yeah. Very odd.
Pretty wild.
but it just goes to show that, like, people want to buy this novel, people want to read more about this dead body. You know?
Kind of do too. Really? Not necessarily because I'm obsessed with Ava and her dead body, but that's the great thing about history, is so much of it, and we've made this comment before, Jane, a lot of the topics we've talked about, they sound like they're made for the movies, or they're made for fiction. And, you know, if it's true that there is nothing new under the sun, then I'm sure we'll hear another story like this again another day. But for now, Miss Erin O'Brien, that is your juicy South American scoop, and I hope it was juicy enough for you. It certainly was for me and for Jane as well. And in the interim, for more South American history and dictator stories, be sure to check out HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.